When you rely so much on technology, when you rely so much on a screen and you forget about kind of the real world or the human side of things, I think that becomes scary, right? I mean, if you're a farmer and you have robots that are maintaining your crops, what happens when the robots fail? Are you going to know how to take care of those crops on your own? If you're in an autonomous vehicle and the autonomous vehicle fails or breaks down, are you going to know how to drive?
Well, hey there, people of the future. It's October of 2017, and we are dedicating this show to the people of 2018 and beyond. I'm very happy to have three-time best-selling author, futurist, and leading keynote speaker of the future of work, Jacob Morgan. Check out the show notes for his books and all the information on Jacob. Many times I'll talk with someone and walk away with more questions than prior to the conversation. Well, this was one of those times, a brief talk with Jacob Morgan in San Francisco. Jacob, I've been looking forward to this conversation. Besides being very busy, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I was sick for the past few days, so now thankfully today I'm back to feeling normal, so I'm happy.
Well, I've looked at your schedule and you're all over the place, so it appears you're doing a lot of speaking.
Yeah, I usually do around 50 events or so a year. So wow. lots of moving around, but it's also fun.
Well, could you please share a little bit about your background and what it is you do?
Sure. So traditionally at conferences, people will say author, speaker, futurist, and that kind of breaks down the three things that I do. Write books and create content on the future of work and employee experience. Give a lot of talks on how the world of work is changing. And I talk about everything from AI and automation, management and leadership, and everything in between. And then the futurist aspect, I went to the University of Houston and received my certification in foresight. And it's all around how do we think about and prepare for what the future might bring. And so I think those are the three areas that I do: speak, write, help companies think about the world of work and how it's changing, and what do we do to prepare.
Now you say the future, you're talking like 10 to 20 years or eternity?
Eternity, yeah. It depends, right? I mean, different organizations, and by the way, individuals as well, I like to think about the future from different perspectives. I like to put things into context. So for some, it could be 5 to 10 years, some 20 years down the road. Once you go beyond that, it's very hard, of course, to really imagine stuff. But then you get to be more creative, and it turns to be more of a fun, thoughtful exercise.
A sci-fi. So,
yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's important for us to think about all of these various futures, but the closer they are, the more you can kind of narrow in on what might happen.
A quote I like of yours is, the future will be much the same, but with cooler stuff. I like that. What kind of stuff?
I don't even remember saying that.
Yeah, I have it on recording. I do. I can prove it.
Hey, then that's a darn good quote.
Yeah, must be. It's original. Are you familiar with the Jetsons?
Of course. I've definitely seen my fair share of episodes.
A lot of the things that they had are actually available now, and this is kind of off the track a little bit, but the thing I would like is the car that folds up into a briefcase, and they don't have that yet, so
would be amazing.
I'm looking forward to that one.
But it's interesting, still you have to drive that car. It's not like an autonomous vehicle. You still have to drive the briefcase car,
and that's a big topic, and this is a prime example of maybe technology surpassing regulation, and that's something you talk about a little bit.
It is, yeah, absolutely. It's definitely an issue, and it's not just technology, it's business surpassing regulation. You know, you look at an organization like Uber, which has, by all accounts, gone far ahead of what rules and business regulations are able to keep up with. And they're kind of making their own rules at this point and paying off whatever fines and penalties that they incur along the way.
They've had some awfully human problems that kind of surpass the rest of the technology and regulation as well.
Lately they've been in the news quite a bit.
Yeah. What do you envision in the way of voice command tech? Like you mentioned Amazon Echo in one of your things. I really think that's a thing of the future, because I am a baby boomer, and my generation goes anywhere from, yes, we invented all that stuff, to no, it's, I don't get it, and it's a big pain in the butt. So I really envision something that you can speak to and not have to get up or even see as being a way to control your computer, or even to get to the future of the workplace podcast, for instance.
Absolutely. I think that's going to be a huge part of how we live and work. I mean, in my house right now, I have several Amazon Alexa or Echo enabled devices. And so I can arm my alarm system, lock and unlock the door, turn the lights on and off, all of those things with voice commands. And you can integrate that into your TV. You can integrate that into all sorts of things. So I absolutely imagine a big part of the future of work and life being controlled by voice. And in the workplace, you can imagine this not only extending to similar capabilities, you know, turning on and off lights, booking conference rooms, but also to making strategic business decisions. So asking a piece of AI, hey, who are the highest performing teams inside the company? Or, you know, why are some teams more successful than others? Which managers are the best inside of our organization? And instead of having to comb through data and look at reports and spreadsheets, being able to feed all of this data into some sort of a voice-controlled platform that can then answer any questions that you might have. The challenge then becomes, how do you figure out what are the right questions to ask? And I think that the voice-controlled future is absolutely going to be a really, really cool and very real and practical thing that we're all going to be dealing with in the not-too-distant future.
Well, AI, artificial intelligence, where is that going to be? I know a lot of people freak out thinking, well, you know, it's going to take over the world or something like that. And put that into perspective a little bit, if you could.
Absolutely. That's a major area of focus. And of course, AI is going to have a major impact in how we work. I don't take a stance of everything will be a utopia or everything will be an apocalypse. I don't think it's so black and white. I think we will absolutely see some areas where there might be some job displacement. We'll also see plenty of other areas where new jobs can be created. Now, the big disconnect I think that we see is on the research side versus the practical side. So if you look at most research reports, they say that 7% of jobs are going to be automated in the coming years, 47% of jobs will be automated in the coming few decades. And it's a lot of panic. And you hear all sorts of pundits and business leaders say that AI is the single greatest threat to humanity, and doom and gloom kind of stuff that's just everywhere. And then you hear equally smart people say, nah, everything's going to be fine. You guys are crazy. So I always find it fascinating that we have the same amount of the same information that two different parties are looking at and drawing two different conclusions. Now, for me, when I say there's a big disconnect between research and practical sort of what's happening on the business side, I've interviewed on my podcast people like the chief people officer of McDonald's and the head of innovation at EY, the chief leadership and people officer of Accenture. And these are companies that have invested heavily into automation and heavily into robots. Let's look at McDonald's as an example. They have put kiosks into many of their stores. Many of their restaurants. And when they were doing this, there was a lot of debate and confusion. And everybody said, oh my God, McDonald's is automating all of their workers. And when I spoke with David Fairhurst, their chief people officer, he said, actually, not only did we not remove workers, in some cases, we actually increased the number of workers in our stores because we're becoming more of a service restaurant where we will bring your food to you and where we're going to improve on that human aspect. You look at EY and Accenture. Accenture automated 10,000 jobs over the past few years, but they didn't replace a single human being. The jobs that they automated were in accounting and finance, and these were jobs traditionally where these employees crunched numbers and dealt with Excel spreadsheets. So they automated those jobs, and then instead they took those employees and they taught them to become strategic advisors and consultants to their clients. So don't crunch the numbers, but help the client make sense of the numbers and develop strategies around it. Evian, a water company, right, that we're all familiar with.
Yeah.
They automated many hundreds of jobs in their European plant. And instead of taking those employees and replacing them, what they did is they retrained those employees to, instead of working on their manufacturing facility, to work remotely and pilot automated shuttles inside of the Evian manufacturing facility. A couple days ago, a huge article came out that Germany has been far outpacing the number of industrial robots that they're investing in when compared to the United States. Yet over the past few years, they have done analysis and found that the impact on jobs has been virtually zero. Now, I'm not saying that everything will be a utopia, but I also think that it's very irresponsible for us to say that hundreds of millions of jobs are going to be automated and that there's going to be an apocalypse and we should all be scared. The reality is that nobody knows what the future will bring. I personally believe that we're going to see several different scenarios kind of play out and overlap, and we need to be prepared for all of those potential scenarios that might happen. But at least for the nearer term future, it's going to be more about us working with AI instead of having AI replace us.
Support for Better Each Day comes from BruceHilliardHomes.com. For a better day in buying or selling a home, search BruceHilliardHomes.com or visit our website, Better Each Day, for more information. And while you're there, subscribe to the show. It's free. That's BruceHilliardHomes.com, Windermere Real Estate. And make it better each day.
You mentioned schools having a bit of obsolescence and, versus internet versus specialty schools or trade schools. I don't know. Where do you see schools going? We'll say a major university that is a traditional university.
Well, I suppose it depends how far you want to look. It's no secret that educational institutions state around the world are struggling, right? I mean, by the time you graduate from a four-year university, most of what you've learned has become obsolete and outdated.
Unless you're studying like Shakespeare or something. Like
exactly. That. And Shakespeare or Latin or, you know, one of those types of things.
Right.
I always have this little debate with people sometimes. And that is why do we even go to school? So imagine this hypothetical scenario. One day, an announcement comes out where the Fortune 100 companies all come together and say, you know what? To apply here, you no longer need a college degree. What do you think will happen to universities around the world? Well, in this case, it would be the United States for the Fortune 100. But if the Fortune 100 or the Fortune 100 came out, or Fortune 500, sorry, if they came out and said, you no longer need a college degree to work here, I think universities would all but disappear.
Or at least adjust their curriculum very quickly.
Yeah, or adjust their, yeah. I mean, if universities are notoriously slow. Unless they were able to do something drastic. Because the reality is that most people go to university because of fear, because we know that we need that college degree. We need that piece of paper to get that first job. And if we don't have that first piece, that piece of paper, we're scared about what our lives are going to turn out like. So we go to college because we're scared. We're scared of what's going to happen if we don't go. But if it no longer became a prerequisite to get a job, to build a career, why would you go? Why would you spend $100,000, $200,000, if not more, to go to a four-year university to get that degree if you no longer needed it to build a career for yourself? I think that we would see a very, very different type of educational system play out. And educational institutions, most schools around the world, that's like the one thing that they have to hang on, that companies require a degree to work there. So in the future, now I'm not saying this is going to change anytime soon. I don't think it will. Although we have seen some companies come out already and say it doesn't matter where you get your degree. So the first step in that journey has happened. It used to be for organizations, you know, like Accenture and PwC, they would say that, you know, to apply here, you need a degree from a certain tier of university. And we've already seen that get abolished, where these firms are saying, you know what, it doesn't matter where you get your degree from. We don't care. Just have a degree. The next step is going to be, you don't need a degree, right? Just show us something in your life that demonstrates skills that you might have. And that could potentially happen, you know, farther down the future. In the nearer term, I think educational institutions need to do a better job, not just of teaching us like job skills, but teaching us world skills. You know, how do you learn how to learn? How do you interact with technology? How do you deal with just the world that we're living in, instead of, say, you know, how do you learn calculus? How do you figure out price elasticity or something like that in economics? So there's some very interesting, I hope, evolutions that are starting to take place.
So there are some just must-have skills that'll still be consistent.
Yeah. I mean, the problem with universities is they do a very good job of creating workers. Right. They do a very good job of creating the drone, the cog, the person who takes orders and just works in a company. And more we're starting to see that not only are companies redesigning themselves to not encourage that kind of behavior, but we're seeing other options that employees have of becoming freelancers and gig workers, of going to drive for a company like Uber, of raising money on sites like GoFundMe or Kickstarter, right? There are other options. And schools only do a good job of creating one type of a person, and that is the cog, the drone, the worker.
That's scary.
It is. I agree.
So there's always been a philosophy versus technology issue in my lifetime, and maybe it started back when nuclear war became imminent and the weapons were of total mass destruction. And it became, well, we have the technology to destroy, but do we have the philosophy, the ethics, whatever, to decide when you use this stuff? And I see it happening with just technology in general. It's the speed of the technology is surpassed. What do you do with it? How do you regulate it? How, you know, what if it gets in the wrong hands? Those kind of things. I don't know. Just throwing that out. What do you have to say about that?
I agree. In fact, I actually did a video, I think it came out today or yesterday, which is all about what happens when we rely too much on technology. A lot of how we make decisions in life are based on what we see in front of a screen, what the screen tells us. But nobody ever stops to think about, what if the screen's wrong? What if something got hacked? What if you're viewing information that is incorrect or outdated or something that somebody wants you to see? Right? We saw this with Facebook and the whole fake news issue. When you rely so much on technology, when you rely so much on a screen and you forget about kind of the real world or the human side of things, I think that becomes scary. Right. I mean, if you're a farmer and you have robots that are maintaining your crops, what happens when the robots fail? Are you going to know how to take care of those crops on your own? If you're in an autonomous vehicle and the autonomous vehicle fails or breaks down, are you going to know how to drive? Today, so many of us are so reliant on Google Maps and on Waze. I think there was actually a study that was done, don't quote me on this, I believe there was, where it actually showed that because we use things like Google Waze and Google Maps so much, that a part of our brain that is responsible for that kind of logic and, you know, figuring out where we are in directions is actually starting to die off a little bit. And so I just worry that we become so reliant on technology that we won't make decisions in life unless a screen tells us that it's the right decision. So I absolutely worry about that stuff constantly.
Yeah, so it's like a tech atrophy or something. You rely on something to do your thinking so much you forget how to find your way home.
Yeah, I mean, it's why, you know, when I drive around with my wife sometimes, she says, okay, let me look at Google Maps and Waze. And I'm like, no, put it away. Like, I will figure it out.
I don't care if we get lost. Yeah, well, men notoriously don't stop.
Just give me a few minutes to figure it out, and I'll get to where we need to go.
See, isn't that the case? Men won't ask directions.
Yeah, or you suppose, yeah, I suppose it could be blamed on the fact that I'm a guy and I don't want to ask for directions.
Well, how did Lewis and Clark do it? I guess they asked a woman.
Exactly. My wife will appreciate that.
Yeah, well, say hello to her. I have never met her, but I'm sure she's wonderful. Do you have any books you recommend to read?
Do they have to be business books, or can they be books about
anything at all?
Oh yeah, there are a lot of great books out there. You know, I always wish I had more time to read, because I'm always creating content and trying to figure out things that I want to write.
I understand.
There are a few books that I really like. One of the most recent ones that I read was called Ready Player One, and it's being turned into a movie. I think I saw the trailer a few weeks or a few months ago. And it's all about what happens when we live in a world where the physical aspects of world start to deteriorate, and we create this virtual world for ourselves where everybody wants to live, and virtual reality kind of becomes the new reality, so to speak. So that's a very interesting and intriguing book. There's another good book called Finite and Infinite Games by James Carse. I first learned about that quite a few years ago through John Hagel, who wrote an article about it. And it's this notion of game theory. Another interesting book, and I'll give you maybe one or two more, Future Crimes by Mark Goodman, which actually looks at technology and what some of the crimes of the future might be. And I'm a huge fan of science fiction, so I like anything by Isaac Asimov, the Foundation series, iRobot, all fantastic books.
All good stuff. Yeah, I like the creative stuff. I think it was an Einstein quote that creativity is intelligence having fun. Something to that effect.
That's a great quote, actually.
Yeah. So that brings us to the fun part of the show here. The future of music, in your words. What kind of music do you listen to? What kind of music do you like?
Oh, man, all sorts of things. I grew up on classic rock, thanks to my dad. So I grew up listening to like Uriah Heep and Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, all those guys. So I, of course, love all that. But when I'm working, I listen to electronic music. I listen to, there's a radio station called Digitally Imported, and they just have tons of different electronic music channels. So depending on my mood, it might be like progressive house music. It might be chill hop music, they call it, which is like hip hop beats, but with some chill out themes in there. Something that where there's not not a lot of words. That's kind of my go-to work music. But I also really love music from the 30s, 40s, 20s, 50s, you know, the stuff that sounds like it's old and that it doesn't sound like it's super high quality. So I love that kind of stuff, too.
You sound like me. When I get asked that question, I say, well, I'll tell you what it is today, and tomorrow I'll probably tell you something entirely different. I don't know.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I like music in general, so it's hard to pick.
Yeah. Well, we're about out of time, but on behalf of the Better Each Day listeners, I want to thank you and wish you the very best in the future.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me as a guest.
Support for Better Each Day comes from BruceHilliardHomes.com. For a better day in buying or selling a home, search BruceHilliardHomes.com or visit our website, Better Each Day, for more information. And while you're there, subscribe to the show. It's free. That's BruceHilliardHomes.com, Windermere Real Estate. And make it better each day.
Radio show with Bruce Hilliard. We'll be back with a new horizon, but until then, honor the future. It comes with a lifetime guarantee.
We're all just trying to make the next day a bit better.